Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, back this Wednesday with another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime drama. We'll hear first this week from Broadway Is My Beat. Their episode titled The Hope Anderson Murder Case, that one aired March 31st, 1950. That's followed up with Dragnet and The Big Imposter, their episode from June 7th, 1951.
Broadway's my beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
Broadway, where darkness drains through the scarlet of neon before it's called night. And the crowd gathers, the people of twilight till dawn. The crowd that coils upon itself, then lashes out into the furious streets. You move with it, afraid to look back over your shoulder because the sound drifting by you. Was it a laugh or a cry? There's nothing in between. It's Broadway, my beat. The message was handed to me at my desk at headquarters, and the message was specific. The courtyard of the Marbury Apartments in Greenwich Village. And the message had a code number to make the matter more easily classified. Murder, translated into two digits. It was my department, so I went there. The courtyard, surrounded by slabs of building. Nothing except the cascade of a fountain tossing the filtered yellow lights from apartment windows. That and a girl lying there, her fingers trailing in the water. And a woman standing beside her being angry about the whole thing.
Well, I see you finally got here.
I finally did. Who are you?
Now it starts. Who am I? What am I doing here? What's this all about? How much of this is going to be in the papers?
Probably all of it. You called the questions. Answer them.
Viola Walker, owner-manager of the Marbury Apartments. Look it up. Age, none of your business. And the girl lying there is a tenant. Hope Anderson. She's dead. Now, what about the newspapers?
That bothers you? Why?
Look, listen to me. I've got an apartment house here, respectable, for girls only. Sure, they can have men callers at certain hours. Who am I to warp young women by no men callers? But respectable. Understand that, mister. The newspapers...
The girl.
Hope Anderson. I told you that. She's dead. I told you that, too.
Yeah, you did, and I believed you. Now try me on how come you're here.
This way. I was on the balcony of my apartment, that one up there. I was sniffing the moonlight. I looked down on the fountain because it goes with the moonlight. Hope Anderson lying there didn't go with anything at all.
Go on.
I came down, saw what happened. Then I posted a notice on the bulletin board, no one allowed in the courtyard tonight. Then I called headquarters. Look, mister, don't you want to look at that? The gun lying there? I saw it. How come you didn't see it?
Yeah. Equipped with a silencer. More about the girl, Miss Walker.
How do I know? She roomed in apartment 6 with, let me see, Jackie Logan. And
Jackie Logan, tell me about her.
Sure. She roomed in apartment 6 with Hope Anderson. And she's been out all night. Now listen to me. If the newspapers get this, it'll give my apartment house a bad reputation.
Death by violence creates its own after patterns of behavior. For some, the pattern is desolation, the paths of shock, then anguish, then emptiness. For Viola Walker, it was none of these. An animal had crawled into her backyard and died. For her, it was simply a matter of removal. But a policeman has no choice. For him, the pattern is known, laid out, to be followed. So I followed it. The body of a girl who was once Hope Anderson was taken away. The gun that had killed her was turned over to the experts of death, the men in technical. And the policeman went back to the Marbury Apartments to talk to the good friend of a dead girl.
Yeah, Mr. Clover, I was Hope's friend. Girls like Hope and me, we don't have a friend in the world, so we nail onto each other. That makes it bearable.
And now that Hope's dead, how will it be, Jackie?
Unbearable. For a while. Maybe for a long time. Want me to brew you some instant coffee under the hot water faucet? Sometimes it comes out good.
Thanks, I'd like some.
You'll have it in an instant. What I always say is what I always like about this town is you can always get hot water. This can get to be something desired, something hoped for. Here you are, Mr. Clover.
Thanks. Oh, that's good. I missed mine this morning.
Yeah, me too.
Tell me about Hope, Jackie.
Hope was a girl like me, only more attractive, more sought after, as the saying goes.
And she did have other friends.
Well, yeah.
All right, let's start with them.
I'd say there were two. That's right, two.
And they were?
Like in a novel, Mr. Clover. An older man and a young man. The young man with a fire inside him that could burn him up, the older man with a fire that was dying out. Rivals for the favors of Hope Anderson. I phrase it this way because I read novels in my leisure time. They're so lifelike.
And their names?
Care for another cup of instant coffee?
Only their names, Jackie.
There's something else you should know about Hope. And me, Mr. Clover. We never discuss names. Manners, education, how they treat little animals, bank accounts, but never names. Sure you don't want any more coffee?
No. But do something else for me, Jackie. Keep thinking about the names. And when you remember them, maybe it'll be better all round if you come to me at headquarters.
Danny?
Yeah?
Hi.
Oh, hello, Tartaglia.
Hi.
Okay. What about it? What did technical turn up with?
Facts.
You'll tell me, huh?
Technical report to wit. The gun found at the scene at the fountain was a Luger of the type much sought after as souvenirs from the last and costliest war. It had been recently cleaned and had been fired only once. And you know what?
Do it gently, Tartaglia. What?
It was only fired only once because there had been only one bullet in the clip. Said bullet was found postmortemly to be the one that killed Hope Anderson. Now comes the good part.
I'm clutching onto the desk.
There were fingerprints on the gun. Fingerprints that can be and were identified. Last night we sent the prints and code to Washington. This morning they came back with a name and address.
And it's who?
Alan Harper, late of the U.S. Naval, where he served well and honorable. Address 8950 Madison Avenue. How did I do, man, Lieutenant?
Dandy, Tartaglia. Just Jim Dandy.
Yes? What is it?
The doorman told me to ask at this apartment. I'm looking for Alan Harper.
Alan is not here. Didn't the doorman tell you that, too?
He did, but I need to find out for myself. I'm from...
If you're a friend of Alan's, believe me when I tell you that he's not here. If you're not a friend, it would be rudeness to prolong this, wouldn't it?
You didn't let me finish. I'm from the police.
Oh, Alan's in trouble, then.
I didn't say that. Let's talk inside, shall we, Mr...
Philip Warren. I'm Alan's stepfather.
Inside, Mr. Warren?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Alan's mother is my wife. Perhaps if you told me what you want with Alan...
You could make it easier for her?
Exactly.
Why do you think you need to do that, Mr. Warren? What frightens you about my wanting Alan Harper?
Why, only that when a policeman comes to one's door, one assumes there has been violence in some greater or lesser degree.
Violence? Did I hear violence, Philip? Oh?
This gentleman is from the police, Vera. Mr.
Danny Clover.
Mr. Danny Clover, my wife, Mrs. Vera Warren.
The police?
It's about Alan, Vera. Mr. Clover came to the door and said he was looking for Alan. I tried to find out why, because I wanted to spare you.
Spare me from what, Philip? I'm sure Alan never in his life did anything his mother could be ashamed of. What do you want with Alan, Mr. Clover?
Is he here, Mrs. Warren?
No. You may look for yourself if you find it compulsory not to believe me.
Where is he?
I don't know. That can't surprise you, Mr. Clover. Alan is a man.
Vera.
Let Mr. Clover speak himself, Philip. He hasn't finished. You were saying, Mr. Clover.
I was saying, where would Alan hide if he were wanted for murder?
You see, I knew. I felt it. I felt it was something that...
What could you have felt about Alan, Philip? Alan is my son.
I only meant... Nothing, Vera. Nothing.
You said murder, Mr. Clover. Whose murder?
Hope Anderson's.
Oh, yes. I read about it in the papers. And you think Alan murdered that girl, this Miss Anderson?
His fingerprints were on the gun that killed her.
Nothing. Nothing will make me believe my boy is a murderer. And I don't know where he's hiding. Hiding, that's your word. May Alan forgive me for using it.
Vera.
Show Mr. Clover to the door, Philip. I'm sure we have nothing else to say.
Yes, Vera. Come, Mr. Clover.
Please, please.
Mrs. Warren, if you know anything... Show me the door, Warren.
One moment, Mr. Clover.
Yes?
Vera knows where Alan is. So do I.
Why are you telling me, Mr. Warren?
Because I believe it will go better with Alan if you find him. The life of a fugitive is not a savory one, Mr. Clover. The boy should have given himself up. The boy must have been...
Where is he?
He has a cabin on the beach at Montauk. He called Vera and told her he was there. Vera told me, and I'm...
Where in Montauk?
It's rather remote, hard to find. I have it. I'll draw you a map.
And he did, in a neat hand with landmarks and compass headings so that it would be impossible to miss the place. I stopped at a lunch counter for spudnuts and coffee until the Long Island train was ready to leave. At Montauk, there was no cab waiting, so I had to walk. The beach was narrow and pebbled, hugging the slow curve of the ocean. And to the left, the high sand dunes, here and there flecked with the remains of an early season's bonfire. It was warm for early spring, and no movement but the pound and heave of surf and the spray. There was a speck down the beach. In a while, it became a cabin, and a figure standing there before it, a man dressed in flannel shirt and dungarees, no shoes. I walked up to him. Hello.
Hello. Beautiful day, huh? Fine day for walking.
Yeah, it is. You're Alan Harper?
All right. Yeah, my name's Harper. Police?
Uh-huh. You shouldn't have run, Harper. Whatever your story is, now it's a bad story.
It's bad from the beginning.
What happened? You and the girl, Hope Anderson, what reason did you have for killing her?
None. That's why I didn't kill her. That's why my story's bad.
I'll listen to it.
She had just told me she was in love with me. Just then, at that moment, she made up her mind, and she was sure of it. And just then, at that moment, she died.
How?
Shot. I guess it was a funny popping noise. Hope fell, then something clattered at my feet. A gun, a Luger, somebody threw it there. I picked it up and tried to fire at someone who was running away. Nothing. No more bullets.
There's someone. Did you see?
Oh!
Alan! The picture held for an instant, the boy clawing at his chest and the life spilling from him. And the pain, sharp and precise and focused, that pinched at my shoulder and flared out. And it wavered, dissolved. And I thought, lying there looking at the single pebble that somehow was in my outstretched hand, how red it was, how orange, how it spun like a million spinning lights. And there was nothing. Nothing at all.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. The cream of the fun and songs on Arthur Godfrey's daytime shows are now brought to you in a half-hour special Godfrey Digest every Saturday night on CBS. So if a date with the dentist, the hairdresser, with a traffic ticket in court kept you from hearing one of the daytime shows this week, or if you want a fast half hour of Godfrey humor and songs by Jeanette Davis, Bill Lawrence, and the Mariners, listen in every Saturday night to the Godfrey Digest on most of these same CBS stations.
Broadway is a carnival of shadows that walk the neon midway and scream when they've been cheated of an attraction. They bought it, they paid for it, it belongs to them, to the ravenous shadows. They told me Broadway felt that way about me. It made Broadway's front pages, they told me, how a kid found me on the beach at Montauk lying under a web of seaweed. How the body of Alan Harper was torn out of the fingers of the hungry tide. They told me how I'd been taken to a small hospital overlooking the sea. And Broadway was wounded because a spectacle like that should have been played in Broadway's own gutter. Then a quiet voice told me I had a visitor, Sergeant Gino Tartaglia.
Danny? Danny, speak to me.
Good morning, Sergeant Tartaglia.
Good morning, Lieutenant Clover. I hope you are in the mood for a visitor from the beyond.
From the beyond?
Yeah, from all the way beyond Manhattan. All my life I lived in New York, I never realized such a place like this existed in the outskirts.
You can speak up, Tartaglia. I'm not dead.
Danny, how can I tell you how glad I am to hear that from your own lips? I've been visiting here for 2 days now. This is the first time they let me see you. There ought to be a law.
What do you got in that package, Tartaglia?
Oh, a get-well confection from Mrs. Tartaglia. Last night she went to the Mixmaster and beat up an old Italian recipe that makes people get well. Here, Danny, it's for you.
Thank Mrs. Tartaglia for me.
Wilco, you feel up to official business, Danny, in the physical wreck you are in?
I'm up to it. The question is, are you?
Oh, sure, Danny, sure. I'm in the pink. Well, let's get down to official business. You need not think, Danny, that we have been lax at the department during your regrettable absence. We have been on the ball.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We have found, for example, that the footprints leading to the dune from which your assailant shot at you and the deceased Alan Harper, said footprints have been obliterated beyond recognition by the sands of time.
That's a big ball. What else?
The bullets extracted from you and the said deceased Mr. Harper have no similarity to any bullets, living or dead, that have been used in the commission of any previous murders or attacks.
Jolly. Anything else?
No, nothing, Danny. Except that the funeral of the deceased Mr. Harper is taking place this afternoon at 2:00 in the Orwell Cemetery.
Oh? Go tell the nurse I want my clothes, Tartaglia.
Danny, you got it in your mind to leave here? You can't do that. You are pale and wan and weak.
Get my clothes, Tartaglia. I have to go to a funeral. Outside of Montauk, it began to rain. A misty drizzle that seemed suspended, melting the houses and movement and sky into a sodden blur. And it held. Later, when we'd gotten back into the city and Tartaglia let me off at Orwell Cemetery, the rain seemed to have let up some, but it was still there. The wet, the chill, the grayness. At the gate, a man answered my question by pointing to a small group of people gathered about a mound of newly turned earth. I waited. Then, when they moved away, when there was only one figure standing there, a woman, then I walked up to her. A woman with eyes closed against the shape of her son's final identity with the world. Mrs. Warren. Mrs. Warren, I didn't have a chance to tell you how sorry I am. I'm Danny Clover, Mrs. Warren. We've met. I was at your home.
Yes. Yes, I know you, Mr. Clover. You want to talk to me, don't you?
There's no hurry.
Consider it this way, Mr. Clover. Grief isn't a simple thing. It's made up of so much. The lost times and memories. So many.
Later.
And there's this, all mixed up with it. The only thing in my heart that I know the words for. Find out who killed my son.
We'll do that. We'll do that, Mrs. Warren.
You see, when he came home, when Alan came home from the Navy, he found Philip there. Philip, my husband. I had married again. I didn't tell Alan.
That's why Alan moved up to that cabin in Montauk?
I tried to get Alan to like Philip. Philip understood. Did everything to make... Well, it was difficult.
And Alan's friends, this is the thing we have to know. Somewhere, someplace, your son touched another person, and because of it, he was killed.
I don't know. After Alan met Philip, it seemed he didn't trust me. His friends were his secrets.
How about Hope Anderson? She was his friend. Your son told me that. His good friend, Mrs. Warren. He was with her when she died.
I don't know. I didn't know her.
Listen to me. It could have happened like this. Whoever shot Hope Anderson had meant to shoot Alan. Whoever that was missed the first time. Killed Hope instead.
Maybe.
We'd better go now, Mrs. Warren. It's starting to rain harder.
Hugo, I'll be all right. Somehow the rain... Well, it doesn't matter. I'll be all right, Mr. Clover.
Hold still, Danny. I don't want the knot in your tie should look sloppy. Yeah. Well, Danny, if I do say so myself, I feel much better now you are arrayed in dry clothes.
You know, thanks for helping me change, Tartaglia. My arm in a sling.
What am I going to do with you, Danny? You rise out of a sick bed without permission, you go to a funeral, stand in the wet rain, get wet. Any one of these things could have waited.
I wonder if she's still there, Tartaglia. I tried to take her home, but she wouldn't let me.
Who, Danny?
Mrs. Warren. It's still raining, Tattaglia.
Exactly. And you are to stay out of sane. You hear me, Danny?
Okay.
Good. Now I will bring you in a visitor who has been waiting to see you.
Who?
A dame, a lady. By the name Viola Walker.
Why didn't you tell me she was here?
I thought it was more imperative you should get in the dry... Okay. I said I'd bring her in. You, go right in.
It's positively outrageous the way a citizen is treated around here. How long do you think you can keep a citizen waiting? After all, you're only a public servant.
You could write a letter to a newspaper, Miss Walker.
You see? You see how you treat us? The innocent victims of injustice, the downtrodden...
I plead for you, Miss Walker. Who could have done you an injustice? Give it a name.
Jackie Logan. That's the name. That's the thing that did it to me.
Jackie, what did she do?
When you were at the Marbury Apartments, the apartments I preside over, I told you they were nothing if not respectable. Remember that?
I remember. I remember a girl was murdered there, too. Hope Anderson, wasn't it?
I'm like a mother to those girls. They have no secrets from me. I keep none from them.
You're hurt because Jackie kept a secret from you?
She's no good, that one. She's rotten and ungrateful. She knows more about Hope's murder than you'll ever find out. I wanted her to tell me about it, to talk it over like mother to daughter, so that we could both share it with you police.
Thanks.
And do you know what the snip did to me? She moved out. Bag and baggage. And when I pleaded with her to come back, do you know what she did to me?
You'll tell me anyway, won't you, Miss Walker?
She slapped me and scratched my face. See? Look at this horrible scar. You've got to arrest her.
Where is she?
I made a point of finding that out. She's at the Kearney Hotel in the Bowery. A dirty, pest-ridden flea bag. Imagine. She left my elegant apartments for that.
All right, Miss Walker. You can go now.
But I'm not finished.
I said you could go. Get out of my sight, Miss Walker. Jackie Logan. Open up, it's Danny Clover. Jackie.
Oh, come in.
Yeah. The place was a mess, like a big wind had ripped in through there and died. Like that, and as if somebody had tried desperately hard to destroy everything he could lift or turn over. The bed had been slammed up into a corner and the headboard wrenched off so that the edge of the mattress touched the floor. And on it a girl, Jackie Logan, staring with unbelieving eyes. Thin lines of blood crisscrossed her face like some abstract design of horror. And over all of it, the pink and blue that stuttered through the window from a sign that read, Kearney Hotel, your home away from home. Jackie, what happened?
He'll die. I swear it, he'll die.
Tell me, Jackie, who was it? I'll get you some water. Here, drink this.
I can't.
We'll get you to a doctor.
Now don't touch me.
Later, then. Tell me about it.
Nothing. I fell down.
Look, someone tried to kill you.
I fell down.
Why didn't he kill you? Hope Anderson's dead and Alan Harper. Why didn't he kill you, Jackie?
He thought I was dead. He beat me. He thought I was dead.
Who? Tell me who.
That's gonna be my way. Because he thinks I'm dead, I got a good thing.
Jackie, look, I can arrest you. Even with you like this, for withholding evidence. Don't you know that, Jackie?
I'm delirious. I don't know what I said. Nothing happened.
He beat you because you know something about him. Because you know he killed Hope Anderson. And why? Is that why you were blackmailing him, Jackie?
I fell down.
Don't you want to get back at whoever did this?
I done that. Ask her. Ask Mrs. Warren. She... Oh, get me a doctor, Mr. Clover.
The police ambulance came and took her away, and its siren was loud to cover the sound of her screaming. Then I went to the Warren apartment. The doorman told me that they weren't at home, that they'd gone somewhere, to Montauk, he thought. So I went there. This time it was night and rain, and the sounds of desolation that only the wind and the sea can shape. Finally, the cabin with its feeble yellow light washing against the darkness.
Mr. Clover.
Stand where you are, Mr. Clover.
I came at the right time, didn't I? Mrs. Warren, maybe you'd better give me that gun.
No, I was just showing it to my husband. See, Philip, this is a souvenir of war Alan brought back. A Japanese revolver. It's clean and loaded. Alan was always a good boy. Neat. A good boy.
Talk to her. Take it away from her. She doesn't know what she's doing.
Don't try, Mr. Clover. Why don't you go over there and dry yourself by the fire?
Mrs. Warren, I...
I was just telling Philip that my son, My son built that fireplace with his own hands, stone by stone. I've been showing Philip things that were a part of my son's life.
Mrs. Warren, I've just left a girl who said she told you something over the phone, Jackie Logan. What did she tell you?
She sounded very ill, as if she were in great pain.
She was. She'd been beaten so hard that whoever did it thought she was dead.
No. Oh, no.
What did she tell you, Mrs. Warren? Was it that she was blackmailing your husband?
What are you talking about? Are you out of your mind?
You think us all out of our minds, don't you, Philip? Mr. Clover? Me? How did you know that, Mr. Clover?
I didn't, but it fits. Viola Walker came to me. Told me to arrest Jackie because Jackie'd slapped her face and left her bored in bed. When I saw Jackie, I knew it was more than that. Viola wanted in on something. Blackmail. Maybe she should have seen what blackmailing did to Jackie.
But Philip saw, didn't you, Philip? Oh, there are so many things to kill you for, Philip. For wanting a girl my son loves.
You didn't mean to kill Hope Anderson, did you, Warren?
Of course he didn't, Mr. Clover. Not the girl, but my son. And finally he murdered Alan. Tried to kill you. And that poor girl, Jackie. Alan.
Watch out, Mr. Clover.
This gun, Philip. Alan's gun. I'm going to kill you with
Mrs.
it.
Mrs. Warren. Mrs. Warren, give it to me.
Don't stop me.
Not that way. Give it to me.
He's getting away. I said I'd kill him, and he's getting away.
The gun. Warren, stop. Don't be a fool, Warren. All right, Mrs. Warren.
He's not dead.
It's only a leg wound.
Mr. Clover.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Clover, you should have let me kill you.
Broadway, where the buildings of the night lean against the darkness in crazy, tilted angles. And walk carefully, kid, or you'll upset their balance. It's a street where you walk the high wire, else you gotta play it safe in a cage. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway. My beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia. The program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. The musical score was composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. The cast tonight included Francis Cheney, Jody Gilbert, Don Orrick, Ida Reese Merrin, and Herb Butterfield. No one has ever devised a satisfactory get-rich-quick plan. But your government has a plan whereby you can save money automatically and get a good return on your savings. It's the Payroll Savings Plan for the purchase of United States savings bonds. By means of this plan, your employer will set aside a small amount of money from your paycheck for the purchase of bonds. If there is no payroll savings plan where you work, or if you are self-employed, you can sign up with the Bond a Month plan at your bank. Under this arrangement, the bank buys a bond a month for you and charges it to your checking account. You'll find United States savings bonds are a profitable investment, and they're as safe as your government. Start buying United States savings bonds today. Joe Walters speaking. This is CBS, where you dance to the music of Vaughn Monroe Saturday nights, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
story you're about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to missing persons detail. A 10-year-old boy disappears from his home in a remote section of the city. 2 nights and 2 days pass. There's not a trace of the boy. Your job, find him.
Friends, compare Fatima with any other king-size cigarette. You'll find a world of difference. Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality.
Quality of tobaccos. The finest domestic and Turkish varieties. Extra mild, superbly blended, to give you a much different, much better flavor and aroma.
Quality of manufacture. Smooth, round, perfect cigarettes. Rolled in the finest paper money can buy. Manufactured in the newest and most modern of all cigarette factories.
Quality. Even to the appearance of the bright, clean, golden yellow package. Carefully wrapped and sealed to bring you Fatima's rich, fresh, extra mild flavor.
So compare Fatima yourself today.
You'll find Fatimas now cost the same as other long cigarettes, but your first puff will tell you...
Ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Buy Fatima.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, August 4th. It was hot in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of Juvenile Bureau. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Inspector Bowling. My name's Friday. We were on the way out from the office, and it was 2:25 p.m. when we got to Bowers Avenue, number 1218.
Yes.
Police officers, ma'am, we'd like to see Mr. Sherman.
Oh, certainly, officers. Won't you come in?
Thank you very much.
I'm Mrs. Keller from next door. I saw you around here yesterday.
Yes, ma'am.
Came over this morning to look after poor Mr. Sherman.
Yes, ma'am. Well, how's he feeling today?
Not too well. Fixed him some nice chicken broth for lunch, and then I helped him in his wheelchair and took him out in the backyard out in the sun. Good hot sun. It's wonderful for his legs. He has arthritis, you know.
Yes, so we understand. Wonder if we could talk to him, Miss Keller.
Well, yes, I guess we have to. He's still out in the back sleeping in his chair last time I looked. Seems a shame to disturb him.
Well, he called us at the office, said he wanted to see us as soon as we could make it out here.
Was it about his grandson, Jimmy? They found him yet?
No, ma'am. Searching parties combing the area. There's still no trace of the boy.
Did any of the other officers who were out here covering the neighborhood talk to you, Miss Keller?
Oh, yes. There was Mr. Lorman, Detective Lorman.
Yes, ma'am.
I told him everything I knew about Jimmy's disappearance. It was right after dinner hour on Monday, about 6:30, last time I saw Jimmy.
I see.
I came out the side door to empty the garbage, and I saw Jimmy hiking up the side of the hill there, just in back of the house, all by himself. Nice boy.
As far as you know, Mrs. Keller, Jimmy is Mr. Sherman's only living relative.
That's right. His only relative, his only grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy's mother and father were killed in an auto wreck. That was 3 or 4 years ago. Sherman's had a terrible lot of tragedy. Jimmy and his grandfather, they're the only ones left.
You can't think of any reason why the boy would want to leave his grandfather, can you?
None at all. Mr. Sherman's a wonderful man. Jimmy loved him, I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Keller! Mrs. Keller!
Oh, that's Mr. Sherman, he's awake. We can go through the house out the back here.
All right, ma'am.
This way.
Thank you. Go ahead, ma'am.
Yeah, okay.
Visitors for you, Mr. Sherman. How are you feeling?
All right, I suppose. Hello, Sergeant.
How are you, Mr. Sherman?
What about the boy? Have you found him yet?
Well, nothing yet, Mr. Sherman. We've added more men to the searching party. We're doing everything we can.
Gone 2 nights and 2 days. Tell me the truth, Sergeant. What's happened to the boy?
Well, right now, we don't know any more about it than you do, sir, but that's no reason to give up hope.
You told us yourself yesterday that Jimmy's been missing once before. It turned out all right that time.
He wasn't gone for 2 nights and 2 days. Maybe you'll just say I'm old and I've got funny ideas, but I got a feeling, Sergeant, something's happened to Jimmy. Something's happened and I can't do anything about it.
You just put those thoughts out of your head, Mr. Sherman. They're going to find Jimmy and it's going to be all right. Why don't you pull up those lawn chairs there, Sergeant?
Sorry.
I'm going to go in the house and fix some cold lemonade for you men.
Well, thank you, ma'am. We got your phone message at the office, Mr. Sherman. Anything special you wanted to talk to us about?
Yes, there was something. When you were talking to me yesterday...
Yes, sir.
I told you that Jimmy had on a brown jacket when he disappeared Monday night.
Yeah.
I was wrong, Sergeant. We found the jacket in his room. All he was wearing was a pair of blue jeans and this white sweatshirt. Do you think that might help any?
Yes, sir, it might. We'll send out a supplementary description of his clothes. We'll see that everybody's notified.
Just wish I could be out there with a searching party. Arthritis is pretty bad today. Caught me at a terrible time. Don't know what I'd do if anything happened to the boy.
I know we've asked you this before, Mr. Sherman, but can you think of any reason at all why your grandson would want to leave home?
No, sir, no reason at all. Those two collie pups over there in the pen. Jimmy just bought them last week with his own money. Saved up to get him.
I see.
The boy's crazy about dogs. That's why I say he just wouldn't pick up and leave everything. The boy and me got along fine. No reason for it, Sergeant. Something's happened to the boy. I just got a feeling.
Officer?
Yes, ma'am?
A telephone call for either one of you.
I get it, Ben. I'll be right back.
You're right.
The man said it was your office calling.
Thank you, Miss Keller. Where's the phone?
Telephone's straight back there in the hall.
Thank you very much. Friday talking.
This is Bowling, Joe. Just heard from the search party up at the hills.
Oh, did they find something?
Yeah, in the Elysian Park area by the upper reservoir.
Uh-huh.
Found a pair of kids' trousers right by the edge of the water.
What kind of trousers?
Blue jeans. Nothing in the pockets. They'll start dragging for a body as soon as they get the equipment. Check it out with the grandfather, huh? See if the boy was in the habit of hiking up there around the reservoir.
Right. We'll call in just before we leave here.
Right, Joe.
Right, bye.
Well, there's your lemonade, Sergeant. Just poured it for you. Nice and cold.
Thank you, ma'am.
What was it, Sergeant? Something about the boy?
Well, nothing definite, no, sir. Just a report on the search party. They're still up in the Elysian Park area.
Oh, I see.
Did your grandson, Jimmy, do much hiking in that neighborhood up there, Mr. Sherman?
Yes, I think he did. Likes to hike up there around the reservoir. Why?
The name on the 316 report, missing juvenile, read James Philip Sherman, WMA, 10 years old. He lived with his 68-year-old grandfather, Oscar Sherman, in a small cottage in a sparsely populated section of the city. Shortly after 6 p.m. on Monday, the boy went outside to play. When darkness fell and he failed to return home, his crippled grandfather went out to look for him. Half an hour later, the neighbors joined in the search. No sign of the boy. At 10 p.m., Juvenile Bureau was notified, and throughout the night, squads of men on foot and in cruiser cars canvassed the area. A local broadcast and an all-points bulletin was gotten out on the boy. Neither the grandfather or the neighbors could find any reason for his disappearance. After almost 48 hours of continuous searching, the only lead we had was the pair of trousers found on the edge of the upper reservoir in Elysian Park. They were shown to the grandfather, but he failed to give positive identification. Dragging operations at the reservoir began immediately. Meantime, Ben and I, together with Lorman and Lopez from Homicide, checked out every possible lead on the missing youngster. One of the tips came from a Frank Grady, an unemployed carpenter who lived five blocks from the Sherman home.
I don't know how much this may be worth to you, Sergeant. I don't want to get anybody into trouble, but I figured this is a pretty important thing.
Well, what is it you want to tell us, Mr. Grady?
Well, as I say, I don't want to get anybody in any trouble, but have you checked over everybody in this neighborhood?
I think we've talked to just about everybody in the area, don't you, Joe?
Well, either us or the man from Homicide. Why do you ask, Grady?
Well, there's a guy who lives down the street there, right down the corner from this house. Old guy by the name of Gilby.
Well, what about him?
As I say, I don't want to cause any trouble, but maybe you ought to double-check him. One thing, he's an ex-convict, I know that. Another thing, he hates everybody in the neighborhood. Hates the kids, too. Wouldn't be surprised if he was your man.
Why do you say that, Grady? Does he have any special reason for disliking the Sherman boy?
Oh, man, Gilby wouldn't need a reason. A real queer one. Say, I got a couple cans of cold beer in the icebox, and I fix you fuzz up.
No, sir. Thank you very much.
Just the same. What makes you think this Gilby had anything to do with the boy's disappearance, Mr. Grady?
Well, number one, I saw old man Gilby out walking Monday night when the Sherman kid disappeared.
Yeah?
Saw him walking along the road up there. The same one that goes up by the reservoir. And I watched him. It was dark by the time he got back to his house. I'd check on him again if I were you.
As far as you know, has Gilby ever been in trouble for bothering the kids in the neighborhood?
Oh, Sergeant, he bothers everybody in the neighborhood. Real queer, lives by himself, always complaining about something. Frankly, I think he's your man. I think he took that kid and he did something to him.
Well, do you have anything at all to back up your opinion?
You dig around, you'll find something on him. He's no good, and I'll bet on it. I've had a couple of run-ins with him myself. He just isn't any good, that's all.
Well, all right, Grady, thanks for the tip. We'll be sure and double-check on the man.
You won't tell him where you got the tip, though, huh? Like I say, I've had run-ins with him before. It might cause trouble.
No, he won't know where we got it. Thanks again.
Okay, Sergeant. It's a pretty important thing. I didn't want to make anybody look bad, but the old man's just no good. Now, you understand that, don't you?
Sure, Grady. We understand. As a matter of routine, we double-checked on Grady's neighbor, Mr. Harold Gilby. We found out that he had no jail record and that he had been at work on Monday from 3 to 11 p.m. He could have had no direct connection with the Sherman boys' disappearance, no more than Grady himself could have had. The so-called tip he'd offered us was like 100 other phony leads in 100 other cases. Spiteful, small-minded neighbors trying to use a tragic situation to work out their jealousies and prejudice on somebody that they didn't get along with in the neighborhood. The search continued. So did the hot weather. Friday, August 6th, no sign of the missing boy. The temperature climbed into the mid-90s. Dragging operations at the reservoir went on. Saturday, August 7th, more legwork, more hot weather. By noontime, Ben and I had run down the last lead we had on 10-year-old Jimmy Sherman. Went nowhere. 1 p.m., we headed back for the office to check with Inspector Bowling.
These are the days when I wish I had a little swimming pool in my backyard. Sure be nice to go home to.
Yeah, well, save your money.
No, it doesn't cost so much. No, I read in a magazine where a fella built his own pool for $95.37.
It can't be much of a pool, can it?
Oh, yeah, it's good size. Of course, he did all his own labor. Had all his friends in to help out.
Well, he must have had a lot of friends, didn't he?
Yeah, he did after he finished the pool.
Friday, Ben.
Hi. Oh, hi, Skipper.
How'd you two make out? Anything?
No luck at all.
It makes it unanimous. Did you hear about the old man, the boy's grandfather?
No, what happened?
I guess the strain got too much for him. He collapsed. They're moving him to a hospital.
Oh, yeah,
that's too bad.
Right.
Our men still up there dragging that reservoir?
Finished this morning. Nothing.
Well, how about the search party? Nothing there either, I suppose.
No, not a trace of the boy. It's a blind alley all the way around. How about the APB, the radiogram?
Had three replies so far. None of them panned out.
Here, grab it. Juvenile Bureau of Bowling. Yeah, Fred. Uh-huh. No good, huh? Yeah, all right. Check you later. I heard it once. I heard it 50 times. No trace of the boy.
Got me, Skipper. Something real weird about the whole thing.
Well, now, look. We know he didn't just disappear into thin air. Kid's gone. There's a good reason for it. There's got to be an answer somewhere.
That's right. You'll find it.
Another week passed, and then a month. 2 months. We were no farther along than the day we started on the case. In November, we had a teletype from Chief Earl O'Clair of the Phoenix, Arizona Police Department. Reportedly, the Sherman boy had been seen in Phoenix. It was another false alarm. The Christmas holidays wore on into a new year. February came and went, then March, April. Tuesday, May 3rd, 1:40 p.m., Ben and I got a call to check in with Inspector Bowling.
This telegram just came in from Dayton, Ohio. Have a look.
Thank you.
Let's see, Joe. What is it?
Jimmy Sherman. They found him. 9 months had gone by, almost to the day, since the Sherman boy had disappeared. The grandfather was contacted immediately. When he was told his grandson had been found and that he was safe, the old man was unable to answer. He broke down and wept. In our communications with the Dayton, Ohio police, they told us that the boy had been found wandering along a highway just outside that city and that he'd appeared to be in a kind of a dazed condition. The boy told the Dayton officers that he'd been kidnapped a short distance from his home in Los Angeles by a man in a blue sedan. He gave them detailed descriptions of both the man and the car. He told them that for the past 9 months, the man had held him prisoner, driving from state to state, never letting the boy out of his sight. He said the kidnapper told him on several occasions that he was holding him for ransom and that he was waiting to get money from his grandfather. On May 8th, the youngster was returned to Los Angeles and reunited with his grandfather. On May 10th, we got a call from the grandfather that he wanted to talk to us. Ben and I drove out to see him.
Come right in, officers. Glad to see you.
How are you, sir?
All right, Mr. Sherman.
Sorry to cause you all this trouble chasing you out here like this.
Not at all, sir. What is it that you want to see us about?
Well, I'm not really sure about it, Sergeant. That's the whole thing of it. I don't know if it's me or what it is.
Well, what's bothering you, Mr. Sherman?
It's the boy, Jimmy. I don't know what to think.
Well, how do you mean, sir? He's all right, isn't he? We saw him as we drove up playing out in the backyard, and the doctor checked him over, didn't
he? No, it's not that. The boy's healthy enough. Nothing wrong with him.
Well, then what is it, sir?
Maybe it sounds a little weird to you, but I'm just not sure.
You're not sure of what?
That boy out there, Sergeant. I'm not sure he's really my grandson.
You are in the communications division of a Metropolitan Police Department, the teletype room.
"43, LOS 52951, 12:03 p.m. APB, WMA 150, 5'6", dark hair, dark eyes, wearing gray suit, no hat. Suspect is wearing glasses, heavy build, 22 years. Suspect is armed with blue steel revolver. Any information? Forward."
You have just heard a teletype description of a suspect. This information will apply to many, but careful screening will eliminate all but one.
You'll find the same is true when you examine king-size cigarettes. Careful screening will eliminate all but Fatima.
Compare Fatima. Fatimas are the same length as any other king-size cigarette, 85 millimeters. Fatima has the same circumference, 1 1/64 inches around.
And Fatima filters the smoke exactly the same long distance as other king-size cigarettes, but in Fatima the difference is quality.
Fatima gives you extra mildness, a much different, much better flavor and aroma. You get all the advantages of extra length, plus Fatima quality, which no other king-size cigarette has.
So compare Fatima yourself. Your first puff will tell you...
Ah, that's different.
Yes, in Fatima, the difference is quality. Best of all, long cigarettes.
Tuesday, May 10th, 2 p.m., when the aging grandfather, Oscar Sherman, told us that he wasn't sure whether the recovered boy was really his grandson, Ben and I didn't know what to think. Our first reaction was that the shock of recovering the boy after he'd almost been given up for lost had been too much for the old man. Mr. Sherman admitted that there was no physical difference in the boy as far as he could see, but he still insisted that there was something wrong, that the boy seemed different somehow. To satisfy the grandfather, Ben and I talked to the boy, but he failed to give us any reason to believe that he was not Jimmy Sherman. We checked with the boy's friends, all the people in the neighborhood who'd known Jimmy over a period of years. They confirmed our opinion. A few thought that the youngster had changed a little, but no one had any serious doubts about it. The boy was really Jimmy Sherman. So the matter was dropped. Thursday, May 12th. Ben and I had lunch, and then we checked back in at the office.
Joe, want to grab that?
Yeah, I'll get it. Juvenile Bureau, Friday.
Sergeant, this is Mr. Sherman talking.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Sherman?
Yes, sir. How are you?
I want you to come out and take this boy, Sergeant. He's not my grandson. I'm sure of it.
Well, how do you mean, sir?
This boy's got a scar on his side. He's had his appendix out.
Yes, sir.
My grandson never had an operation in his life.
Before we left the office, Ben and I briefed Inspector Bowling on the phone call from the grandfather. Then we drove back to the Sherman house. While Oscar Sherman didn't claim that he knew his grandson's complete medical history, he was certain that the boy had not had his appendix out and that he had not had an operation. He told us that his neighbor, Mrs. Keller, could substantiate that she had known Jimmy since he was a baby. We put in a call to the Sherman's family doctor. He wasn't in. We left a message, and then we went next door to see Mrs. Keller. We found her in the kitchen washing dishes.
I just got a couple more to rinse. Can you wait a minute?
Yes, Loretta.
Of course we can.
No, to tell you the truth, Sergeant, I just don't know what to think about Mr. Sherman. Maybe the whole thing was too much for him. His mind's going back on.
Well, to your knowledge, Mrs. Keller, was the boy ever operated on?
No, not as far as I know. But it's possible he did have an operation. I didn't hear about it. Sergeant, as far as I'm concerned, that boy's Jimmy Sherman. I don't know what his grandfather's up to with all that silly talk.
Well, if it's not really the boy, we won't have too much trouble finding the truth.
There's no question in my mind. Of course it's Jimmy. Why, when he was over here the other day, he talked about the party I gave for him one Halloween. He even remembered the children who were there.
Mm-hmm. Are the other neighbors as sure about the boy as you are?
Just about. Miss Foster down the street, Jimmy was in to see her yesterday. He talked about some changes she'd made in her living room, asked her about some relatives she has living out of town.
Mm-hmm.
Come to think about it, Jimmy even remarked on that new trailer rose I planted out in front. Besides, as the boy's dogs, why, they knew that youngster the minute he set foot in the yard.
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you very much, Mrs. Keller. If we have any more questions, we'll contact you, is that all right?
All right, Sergeant. Couldn't fix you a cup of coffee, could I?
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Mrs. Keller. Taking time now.
Poor old Mr. Sherman. I don't know what to make of it. He's so mixed up.
Yes, ma'am. So are we. We left the neighbor, Mrs. Keller, and went back next door to the Sherman house. The grandfather told us that the family doctor hadn't returned our call yet. At 3:30 p.m., the boy came home from school, changed his clothes, and went out into the backyard to play. We figured we had nothing to lose in talking to the boy again. We found him in the small workshop at the rear of the garage where he was sawing on a piece of plywood with a hacksaw. We talked to him for about 20 minutes. It was no different than the first time we interviewed him. He was relaxed and talkative.
Say, would you hand me that hammer there, officer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, here you go.
Thanks. Boy, if I ever get this thing finished, it's going to be the best coaster around here. These are the wheels I'm going to put on it. Pretty good, aren't they?
Yeah, they look fine, son. Do you like building things, coasters and things like that?
Oh, yeah, I like it all right. It's fun.
Your granddad says you've changed quite a bit since you got back, Jim. Says you didn't like working around the shop here before.
Well, I guess I don't really. You know, once in a while I like to come out and fool around.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen Mr. Barlow down the street since you've been back?
Mr. Barlow? No, I went down to see him, but he wasn't home. Maybe I'll go down and see him tomorrow.
His name isn't Barlow, is it, Ben? I thought it was Robinson.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Mr. Robinson. Sometimes I forget.
How do you and your grandfather get along, Jim, all right?
Oh, sure, every once in a while looks kind of funny at me. I don't know. I guess he's still worried about that man taking me away, you know, and all.
Uh-huh. How you been feeling lately, Jim, okay?
Sure, I feel fine. Hardly ever get sick. That's good.
You ever been in the hospital, son?
Uh-huh, just once. Had my appendix out. I hate hospitals. Can I have that can of nails there, please?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, here you are.
Gotta make this good and strong, you know.
I'd like to ask you a question, son.
Yeah?
What's your real name?
I'm Jimmy Sherman, you know that.
No, I'd like to have the truth, son. Who are you?
You must be fooling, officers. You know who I am. Jimmy Sherman.
No, Jimmy Sherman never had his appendix out, son, but you did, and you've got a scar to prove it, haven't you?
Sure, I had my appendix out. Ask my grandpa, he'll tell you.
I'm afraid he won't, son. He says he's not your grandfather. He says you don't belong here. His grandson never had an operation in his life.
How about it, son? You want to tell us about it?
Oh, Grandpa isn't feeling well. He doesn't know what he's saying.
Well, he knows you're not his grandson. Now, come on. What about it, son?
All right. I'm not Jimmy Sherman.
He told us his real name was Donald Rush. He said he'd run away from his home in Springfield, Ohio, 2 weeks before. He said that he'd been picked up by the police on a highway just on the outskirts of Dayton, Ohio. On returning the boy to the station, the police officer saw that he fitted the description of the missing California boy perfectly. It was almost as if the two were identical twins. Under the impression that the youngster was suffering from shock or amnesia, the police officers told him all about his home and his friends in California. They gave Donald Rush all the information that they had on the missing Sherman boy. All the newspaper stories, pictures, the dozens of teletypes and circulars which had been sent across the country in an effort to locate the missing youngster. On his way out to California on the train, the Rush boy was given dozens of newspapers to read, which contained thousands of words concerning the disappearance of Jimmy Sherman. So, by the time he got to Los Angeles, Donald Rush knew everything he had to know about the boy he was impersonating. We questioned the Ohio youngster further. Besides an exceptionally high IQ, he admitted to having an almost photographic memory. We took him in the house to face the grandfather of the boy that he'd been impersonating, the boy who was still missing.
Mr. Sherman.
Yes, Sergeant. Sit down, won't you?
The boy here has a confession for you. He wants to tell you himself.
I think I know. I was right all along, wasn't I, Sergeant?
I didn't mean anything by it, mister. I just thought it'd be fun to make out like somebody else for a while.
You wouldn't know the difference, would you, Sergeant?
No, sir. I'm afraid I wouldn't. That picture over there on the mantle and the boy here, they look exactly alike to me.
There's only one thing I'd like to know, son.
Yeah?
Why'd you do it? Why'd you try and fool me?
Oh, I don't know, mister. I ran away from home, and the cops picked me up near Dayton. They thought my name was Jimmy Sherman. They said I was a missing kid from California.
Well, why didn't you straighten them out right then, son?
I was kind of afraid, and if I told them what my real name was, they would have sent me back home. So I just let them think I was really Jimmy Sherman. They seemed to be pretty sure I was.
How long did you think you could keep it up, son, pretending you were somebody else?
I don't know. Guess I never thought much about that. I got here, and everybody was nice to me. I just didn't think about anybody finding out. Honest, mister, I didn't mean to do anything wrong. I didn't mean to hurt anybody.
And you never saw my grandson? You never saw Jimmy?
No, sir. I just got on the train. They brought me out here.
You don't know where he is? You don't know how he is?
All right, try to take it easy, Mr. Sherman.
Why would you do it, boy? You're a stranger. Why would you try to fool me about Jimmy?
I'm sorry, mister. I didn't mean it. Honest, I didn't mean it.
Thought I had him back. Thought I had him back.
Come on, Ben.
Let's go, son.
I didn't want to make him cry like that, Sergeant. Honest, I'm sorry. Couldn't you just let me stay here with him?
No, I'm afraid not, son.
I won't do anything wrong. Don't you think I could just stay here with him? I'll go right back in there now and tell him I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry too, youngster, but you're not the boy he's looking for.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On Wednesday, May 20th, a meeting was held at the Juvenile Bureau, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that meeting.
And now here is our star, Jack Webb.
Thank you. Friends, I hold in my hand a new pack of Fatimas. All I need to prove that Fatima is the best of all long cigarettes. Now here, on the side, you'll find this statement. Fatima contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make Fatima extra mild. Fatima gives you all the advantages of extra length, plus Fatima quality, which no other king-size cigarette has. So tomorrow, buy a pack of Fatimas. I know you'll find that in Fatima, the difference is quality.
Donald Rush, who impersonated missing 10-year-old Jimmy Sherman, was returned to the custody of his parents at their home in Springfield, Ohio. 4 months later, the body of Jimmy Sherman was discovered buried on a farm on the outskirts of Riverside, California. The boy had been murdered. His killer, a farmer in the neighborhood, was subsequently apprehended and brought to trial. He was found guilty of murder in the first degree and was executed at the state penitentiary, San Quentin, California. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, portions transcribed from Los Angeles.
Stay tuned for Counter Spy, next over most NBC stations.
That's going to wrap it up for this episode of Case Closed. If you want to hear more from Broadway Is My Beat, more from Dragnet, more Case Closed, more old-time radio, just visit RelicRadio.com. Find all the shows linked to right on the front page, alongside links to our forum, Shoutcast stream, Facebook page, and everything else Relic Radio. If you'd like to help support it all, you can do so from the website as well. Just click on the Donate button right in the menu up on top. Thanks very much to those who have. It's how it's all made possible. Thank you very much for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.